Welcome to Casey Art Pie, where the art scene is positively scrumptious. I'm your host, Rochelle Gardner-Rowe. Debuting during Women's History Month, that is March of 2017, Casey Art Pie will focus on a project called Femin Is, an online and offline project and exhibition that will explore a range of issues on feminism and the arts from our unique Kansas City perspective. On today's session, we'll talk with Janet Kummerlein, a Kansas City-based fiber artist who marched to the beat of her own drum and sparked a successful career starting in the 1960s. Kummerlein is a pioneer in the contemporary fiber art movement as well as a painter. Born in Detroit, Michigan, Janet studied painting at the College of Creative Studies in Detroit and sculpture and metalsmithing at the Cranbrook Academy of Art. Her creations range from small residential pieces to 50-foot murals for libraries, banks, and offices. Notable commissions include a portrait series of women jazz artists for the American Jazz Museum and award-winning liturgical murals. Her work has been placed in institutions such as the Smithsonian Museum of Fine Art, the Chicago Institute of Art, the Dow Museum of Contemporary Art, the Museum of Art and Design in New York, among many others. Her work has been exhibited around the world in England, France, Germany, and Switzerland. We'll be back with Janet Kummerlein after the break. This podcast is supported by an inspiration grant from the Arts KC Regional Arts Council, whose mission is to unleash the power of the arts. Whether you're an artist, a company, or a community member, check out artskc.org to see how you can join them in their vision to build a city of great dreams and vigorous life where everyone participates in and benefits from the arts. Now, back to the episode. Good morning and welcome, Janet, to KC Art Pie. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you. It's nice of you to be here.
So, Janet, you are well-known in Kansas City, and your work has been collected and exhibited around the world. You're very well-known for your fiber mural installations, and you also do painting, sculptural fiber vessels, jewelry, and scarves. But what I'd like to do is go back to the very beginning. And you came to Kansas City around 1959, and very quickly found yourself the sole caregiver of four young children. And yet you decided to be an artist. And even today, most of us would consider this to be extremely brave. And I was just wondering if you could share with us a little bit about how that came to be, how you came to that decision.
Well, it wasn't so much deciding to be an artist. I had been trained as an artist. I was an artist all the way since kindergarten, really. And I went to a special magnet art school for high school, and then I went on to the Detroit Society of Arts and Crafts, and Bloomfield Hills had a wonderful internationally known Cranbrook Academy of Art, which I attended. When my husband passed away, and my children were quite young, my first thought was to use my art training for my career. It didn't occur to me that this was impractical, because when we're trained as an artist, we're trained that art is a serious endeavor and a serious profession, and I had no reason to think that it was impractical. I was sitting with a group of men who were helping me, a stockbroker, a lawyer, a banker, and I said, oh, don't worry about me, I'm a good artist. And of course, they all rolled their eyes. I mean,
little did they know.
Well, later, one of the lawyers came to my house and said, you know, we didn't think you could do it, but you did. And it just seemed, at the time, in the early 60s, fiber internationally was being spotlighted. there was an exhibition, an international exhibition in California called Fiber as Medium. Mm-hmm. And they invited people from all over the world, and there were exhibitions in the galleries, in the banks, in the public buildings, and Lower California was just flooded with exhibitions, and Sheila Hicks was part of that exhibition. And I was asked to be in one of the shows, and so I attended the conferences, and I met some of these wonderful artists. And again, it was reinforced in me that this was a valid endeavor. And fiber was being introduced into various commercial buildings and residences. And when I had shows in galleries, architects and other people came and asked me to do other projects. One of the first ones I was asked to do was a 10-foot by 15-foot mural for an Episcopal church in Kansas City, Kansas. The piece still hangs there in St. Paul's Church. Oh, wow. After all these years. And another piece that I was asked to do was for the Alameda Plaza Hotel lobby, and it was a 12-foot by 20-foot piece. But now it hangs in the Unitarian Church in Kansas City, Missouri.
Now, at the time, was that a normal size for you to work on, or?
Oh, no, it was huge. Oh. For me. I was scared to death. I didn't think I could do it. But with each challenge, you figure out the various ways to solve it and where to work on it. And so it worked out.
Later on, I don't think that was the largest piece you've done, was it?
No, eventually I worked with a gallery in California that had my slides, and an architect came in and saw them and selected me as one of the artists for the Social Security building in Richmond, California, where I did a 5-foot by 30-foot piece, and they had a book that contained images of all of the art that they commissioned throughout the country. And the book was called The Place of Art in the World of Architecture. When the people in Anchorage, Alaska were building their municipal library, they got a hold of that book and called me. I was in Kansas City in June when it's so hot, and they said, would you be interested in doing a piece for our library? And I said, I sure would.
You got to go to Alaska?
Yes, I did. I went the first time to submit drawings to the committee so that they could select the piece that they wanted for the library. And then the second time I went was to supervise the installation. It took 16 hours to install the piece because it was on a curving mezzanine wall, and they had to set up the scaffolding, and the furniture, the desks and all, were in place, so they had to put the scaffolding up and take it down and put it up and take it down. So the piece was in 11 sections, and it was soft, like a heavy quilt, mm-hmm. and it had rope on it. And so the sections had to fit together.
And for our listeners, we'll have an image of this work, Arctic Echoes, in the show notes. At 50 feet, it's one of Janet's largest, and it's very colorful with sweeping curves that hugs the wall of the library's mezzanine.
the people in Anchorage felt that the imagery reminded them of their terrain, their mountains and their water, and so.
Beautiful. But all this time you've been living here in Kansas City, correct?
Yes.
So I was wondering if you could give us sort of a snapshot of what you saw in the art scene in Kansas City around that time, 60s and 70s. Sort of what was your impression of the art scene back then?
Well, there were many, many fewer galleries than now, and many, many fewer artists than now. And I remembered having lived in Chicago and Detroit, where there were so many more, so it was frustrating to me. And there were always a lot of letters written to the editor about, you know, more, there should be more enthusiasm about the arts and there should be more support. And little by little through the years, that certainly has happened, because we have a vibrant art community now, as you know.
I certainly agree. At that time, where was your studio?
Well, because my children were small and they were in school and they required a lot of space for their projects and things for school, I decided to rent a space outside of the home. I rented a small office space in Waldo. I had a hard time finding the time to get there. So, you know, that was a bit of a challenge. And then as I began to get these bigger projects, I rented larger spaces. I rented a storefront in Westport, and that's where I did the Alameda piece. But the storefront was only 12 feet wide, so we kind of had to walk around the tables, you know.
So some of your pieces were actually larger than the space you had.
Yeah. But they were, as I said, they were made in sections. Then the spaces down around the crossroads and in the garment district. And it was wonderful. It was wide open, two walls of windows for light. And I was there for many years. And then I rented a space at 20th and Broadway. And I was there for, 23 years or so. And then I moved to a studio in Westport, where I was for, 5 or 6 years, I guess. And then I decided to move the studio home.
And so now the entire house is the studio.
Yeah, it really is.
So moving on to more recent commissions, you started out painting. And in 2010, the American Jazz Museum commissioned you to do a series of, I believe, 11 portraits.
Well, the way that began was that the Johnson County Community College had an auction, and they would send out things for the artists to make art out of, and then they would auction it off.
So they would give you materials.
Right. So one year they gave us records to make art out of. And I did a portrait of Miles Davis, and I used the record in back of his head like a halo.
Oh, okay.
And somebody bought the painting and donated it to the Jazz Museum. And then I talked to them about my doing portraits of women jazz artists in the area. And so I'm still involved in that project. My goal was to do 12 so that if they wanted to feature one every month of the year, or if we wanted to make a calendar or whatever, I thought that 12 would be a good number. So far, I have done 11, and 9 of them are in the American Jazz Museum. I have two of them here.
Well, that's exciting. This project is ongoing. The women that you researched and did portraits of, was there one or two that maybe stood out to you?
Well, the first one I painted was Angela Hagenbach. And Angela is a model as well as a vocalist, so she was, of course, a marvelous subject for a portrait because she's an absolutely gorgeous woman. And then you're familiar with the other ladies, Marilyn May. She's internationally known.
I got to see her at a Christmas concert at Johnson County Community College a few years back.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Vivacious to the core.
Yeah, no kidding. She's a wonderful showman. And Karn Allison, who's internationally known. Carol Comer, who has been around Kansas City for a long time and has taught many of the other artists, including Angela, who had gone to her. Lisa Henry, who is a marvelous. And then Myra Taylor and the Wild Women. Myra Taylor, unfortunately, is no longer with us. But Millie Edwards and Geneva Price and Laurie Tucker, all.
And this is the Wild Women of Kansas City, and we'll have a picture of this portrait in the show notes. Was there anything particularly interesting that you discovered about one of the women that maybe you didn't know before?
Yes. Deborah Brown is a local. She lives locally, but she travels all over the world, and I found her remarkably interesting. I visited her in her home, and she came to my studio, and I photographed her, and she talked about enjoying bringing musicians from all over the world to Kansas City, although we are a heavy jazz community. She has said it was interesting to have these mixes of groups of people from Poland, from Japan, and these are places she has traveled to give concerts. So having the musicians have opportunities to meet each other and develop new points of view was important to her. So besides being an extremely talented jazz singer, she was also quite an educator and a very interesting woman.
So that was a recent commission. I guess it's still an ongoing project. And so is there anything you'd like to share with us of what you're working on in the studio right now?
I'm working on 10-inch by 10-inch paintings of calla lilies.
And we'll have a few pictures in the show notes. And I think I've read that when it comes to painting, color comes before form for you.
I think it's not something you consciously decide. And, of course, in the case of the calla lilies, the attraction to them is their extremely sculptural form, and many of them are white, so then the background is the only color that is considered.
And touching on sculptural form, I also wanted to hit upon your sculptural vessels. How did those come to be?
When I was studying in school, I studied many forms of art. I studied silversmithing. I studied sculpture. I studied painting. I studied drawing. And after working in fiber, fiber incorporates all of those things. It's sculptural. I draw on the vessels and then paint them. So in doing the large fiber pieces, I had a lot of small pieces of fabric. I had bags and bags of remnants. And
those add up after a while, don't they?
Yes, I had a lot of those. And I had always loved vessel forms, but one of the things I have never studied is ceramics. I didn't much like clay. And so I started working with vessel forms over molds by using fabric that I dipped in adhesives. And it's actually like paper mache, only it's fabric mache. Okay. And so it's built up layers of fabric that harden. And then I paint them with acrylic paint. So it incorporates, you know, all the elements of ceramics and sculpture and fiber and paint.
It's bringing it all together.
Mm-hmm.
Your range of work is amazing, and it seems over your career it's been a little bit of bravery, a little bit of naivete, but also a little bit of serendipity.
Mostly naivete.
So it sounds like that was a good thing, though.
Yes, ignorance is bliss. You have no idea that something that is, as I said, in school you're taught that this is a serious endeavor and it's very important to you. And of course, with anything, if it's important to you and you believe in it and you offer it outward, people also consider it important. And my feeling was the need for the warmth of fiber and texture and color.
Well, and you've certainly brought that into the world. Well, Janet, thank you so much for sharing your wonderful work and your life with us today. And thank you also for inviting me into your beautiful studio and home.
Thank you for coming.
Did you enjoy today's slice? You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, or like Casey Art Pie on Facebook and follow it on Twitter. Just search for Casey Art Pie. You can also support this podcast by visiting patreon.com/Casey Art Pie. For the price of a cup of coffee or a slice of pie, you can help Casey Art Pie serve up tasty episodes into the future. Until we nosh again, I'm Rochelle Gardner-Rowe, and thank you for listening.